Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting and tubular episode of The Filmlosophers, a show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is the Bossa Nova, most fabulous turtle in the entire world, which he's not a turtle, he's actually a human, and we're thankful for that, Mr. Spencer Williams.
Sup, yo?
I don't think they said, oh, you know, Michael Bay. Never mind. Hey, Spence. And speaking of turtle in the room who's hiding in her shell, we got with us intern manager, managing intern, Amy.
Yes, I am here.
She is, don't mind her. She's upset because she doesn't realize when
I got yelled at. Yeah, she did. At before the episode even starts.
She did because she just, yeah.
Again.
By the way, we are hiring for a new intern manager. Jeez. I'm just kidding.
We have an intern we can promote, and I will just gracefully step back.
Speaking of promote, we're going to be talking about the 35th anniversary of one of the most cult classic films of our nerd age, and that is the 35th anniversary of 1990's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So stick around as we dive into that and give our piece about it, as well as talk about the franchise. But before we do, Spencer, give us them opening credits.
Tune into brand new episodes each and every week.
Week!
Now on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at filmlosophy101. Also, we have a blue sky at Filmlosophers Podcast.
That's right. Man, you went through that pretty quick. Good job.
Okay. Thank you.
Head on over to our website at filmlosopherspodcast.com. There we got allegedly over 300 episodes. Everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrills and chills, celebrations of movies and actors galore. If you're looking for it, head on over to there at filmlosopherspodcast.com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, TuneIn, iHeart, Amazon Music. You can tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Filmlosophers. Give us a like or subscribe and listen in. Tell us how we're doing. Have you seen Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? Where have you been for the last 35 years? And we'd love to hear your thoughts, and we'll give you the socials at the end of the show. We have a great show in store as we're going to be talking about the 35th anniversary of this film. And I wanted to kind of preface before we dive into that. When it comes to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and when it comes to most of our nerd history, there's always like one or two franchises or fandoms that really kind of have a lot of our age group, you know, flock to. Like, there's people who like He-Man, there's people who like Ninja Turtles. Did you guys ever have a specific fandom that you guys flocked to as a kid?
It was across two, depending on what age of child I was.
Okay.
But it was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles for a good chunk of my early years, and then flipped over the Power Rangers.
Ah, okay, okay. So you bought all the toys and the Zords and the weapon, the plastic weapons. And,
yep.
Okay, okay. When did that stop? Or has it not stopped is a better question.
I remember junior high when they went to, what was it, Power Rangers Lost Galaxy, and I was like, yes. Yeah, I'm done.
What about you, Ames? Hold on, did you gravitate more to just like the action toys like that, or were there any like girly things that you actually liked? I'm just wondering. I have to ask.
Books. I liked books. I wasn't allowed in front of the TV. If you want to be really depressed.
Now
but
I
didn't do Babysitter's Club or anything like that. I was a boxcar kid. So.
Oh, me too.
Yeah. But if
they
we're talking.
They're dating boxcar.
I know. You're like, listen, we've got some problems. Someone needs tetanus shots. Like, that's everybody.
Yeah, you guys had boxcar. I had goosebumps. So yeah. I didn't.
I wasn't allowed to have goosebumps in the house. But anyway, when we're talking about animated things that I flocked to and actually got product for, It would have been Batman the Animated Series because I actually was allowed to collect some of the action figures, which I wish I'd kept them because they were really nice. They were really nice.
So which ones did you actually get?
Robin, Batman, Livewire, and I had Harley.
So did you actually got to watch the show?
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
It was really nice.
Why was there a turnaround for that? Was it because it was Batman?
Because it was Batman. Maybe. And it was also like my brother was the Power Rangers Street Sharks. I mean, like I watched Reboot. I was hard in the paint for Reboot until suddenly whatever his name, the kid grew up and we lost everybody and Dot's Diner was in mayhem. I think that's like season 4.
Yeah.
But I really didn't have an opportunity to collect anything that came out of like the shows save for Batman the Animated Series. Go figure. But yeah, I was well versed in all things, but did not get to books. I got books.
Yeah, I hear the books thing. Okay, I got you.
I'm not cool like you, Mr. Turtle Man over there in the shirt.
Yeah, I'm wearing my Roosevelt's Ninja Turtle shirt because we were talking about it today. But
one of three.
Yeah, I have a few. But I guess okay, since we started off with education over here, I read. So I collected from a very early age. The Goosebumps series. So I had all of them, even all the way up to when they started doing the Choose Your Own Adventure ones, which were so fun and always in the mentality of like you would turn the page or turn to the page that you were chose to go to and like, wait, I didn't let go of my finger. Hold on, go back. So those were always fun. I collected Goosebumps. I still collect Goosebumps actually because I have the full original set in print, obviously. In storage right now. So that's actually really cool. But in terms of toys, because Amy said product and it made me feel old. In terms of toys, I collected with a fervor the real Ghostbusters toy line. So I had all of the Ghostbusters toys. I had the Ecto-1. I had all the creatures that if you push the button, they would like extend or turn into the monsters. I even had like the ectoplasm goo that would come in with some of the ghosts that you would buy. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I had all that. And then through the course of moving and stuff like that, obviously things happen. And Lord knows where all those went. But when I got older, and we've talked about this before, when I got into like junior high and high school and I was at a private school, a Christian private school, to be specific, there was a certain era of that season in my life where they did the whole rock and roll Sorcerers of the New Age whole like burning things and things were evil and stuff.
Everything was evil.
And one of the things that was talked about was how toys were even satanic in itself because ectoplasm is a byproduct of, you know, a supernatural experience that only the devil can create. And that there was one situation where the guy who was on the video was saying how that a woman had told him of a situation where, I guess at the time He-Man, with the Grayskull castle, had a kind of ectoplasm goo that came with it, which mind you, it's all just gack. That's all it is. But yeah. They called it like an ectoplasm, whatever. And he was holding on to the goo in one hand and he was holding on to the He-Man sword with another. And he was in the backyard. And the mom told this guy that she was so worried because all he could do was hold the sword and he had the goo in the other hand. And he was just saying by the power of Grayskull over and over. And I think he was possessed. and I was like, oh man, I'm glad I didn't have that as a kid. And then he goes, also, if you ever bought any of the real Ghostbusters toys, there was this stuff in it too. And I was like, oh my God.
And that's the day all the goo was gone.
Well, by that point, I didn't know where any of that stuff. I had already moved at that point from California to Texas. Mm-hmm. So any toys, whatever I had, were gone. They were long gone. Hmm. But it's funny because it's like at this point, I was a teacher. Like in my history, like since that time, I've became a teacher. And I've learned how this stuff is made. And so I'm like, These people were so wrong. If they literally have the product to make a demonic product, like in their own pantry, you know, honestly. So if you want to talk about who Spencer, has the tools to make, let's go make some satanic panic. But it's like, it's so ridiculous. And the fact is, like, I love those toys. It was an opportunity, first off, in the fandom in itself, it was an opportunity to continue, like, my love for Ghostbusters in a kid way that they kept going for a while. And, you know, and I loved it. It was fun. And, you know, that was something I loved. Of course, just like Spencer mentioned, I also collected the Power Rangers toys. I even bought the toys that came out for the movie. The ones with the movie. With the flip heads.
Right. I just barely remembered those things.
Did you not recall those?
Yeah.
They were like super tall too. Like they were like really lanky. Big. It's like, and everybody had the same body shape. It didn't matter if they were a woman or a man. Like,
yeah, they did that
muscular
with the,
necks. It was with, all muscular.
The original toys for the original series too. I'm like, the pink and yellow Rangers were the same as the red and the blue.
And they were yacked.
Yeah. So, but it's crazy how much, like, when you look back at, like, our history and our nerd history, to be specific, Amy with her Boxcar Kids.
What's wrong with that? I have Polly Pockets still in storage. Like,
why
OG?
Didn't you say Polly Pockets
because
then?
Because
you said Boxcar Kids. Like, we had to feel bad for you.
What? I read it too.
Is that all you did? Were you stuck in
a... I was also a fan of Little House on the Prairie, but it was Little House in the Big Woods.
Don't say that.
Man, I got really pissed off with Little House on the Prairie.
Wait, what?
The series or the books?
Wait, did you read the books?
Yeah.
Wait, you read the books?
Yeah, you had to in school.
Yeah.
What poor hell did you guys live in during this time?
Hello, California. Sacramento. Oh, it's true.
I'm like, they didn't make us read any of that stuff. Yeah. I mean, we were learned, like, during that time in school, like, they were making us play Oregon Trail and reading about Texas's history about annexing ourselves from Mexico.
So no actual, like, you know.
You were reading. Forced to go to Sutter's Fort, Sutter's Mill, yeah,
we went to the yeah. fun places like the Alamo where Pee Wee Herman's bike was in the basement.
I heard about his bike being in the basement.
We went to the Tower America. We went to the wax museums.
There
we went to the Ripley's, believe it or not.
Less actual, like, things that were important to that time frame in the list of things you just gave us. Like, Pee Wee Herman was not at the Alamo.
But it was in the movie. The psychic told him that his bike was at the basement of the Alamo. Did you forget that?
No, I remember that. Come but on. That has nothing to do with the whole
R.I.P.
event
Paul
of
Rubens.
The Alamo.
Yeah. I mean, it eventually happened.
Is that why we remember the Alamo?
Because Davy Crockett helped hide Pee-wee's bicycle.
I'm going to remember that. That's why I learned about Texas's history.
And speaking of ridiculousness, this transitions us over to our conversation of the evening, and that is our take on the 35th anniversary of 1990's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Oh, man, this movie goes back way to when we were young and finally able to go to the movie theaters without worry about making noises or being ridiculous. Well, most of us at that point were about four.
Yeah, but we still would have made noise.
I didn't. Uh-huh. I went to the theater to go see this bad boy.
Yeah, you know that as a four-year-old.
As a four-year-old, he not a peep. Not a peep. He didn't cowabunga once.
Look, just because you two were troublesome doesn't mean, I mean, oh, I had to read
Out
Little House on the
three
Prairie.
Of us,
oh
the
my
troublesome
God.
Ones are not us.
I was literally watching things that at like the age of three that was like, okay, this should scare both of you guys and give you guys pee-pee nightmares. And yet you guys are the ones that are saying I was
you said pee-pee nightmares.
Yeah, we're your real inner 30-year-old came out right there.
We're going to give him, I'm making Christmas mugs, and it's going to say
Christmas smugs. She's giving us Christmas smugs.
Yes.
All right, let's go ahead and dive into this. As we dive into this celebration of this movie, we'll be talking about the different aspects of not only the production, but also its implications in history and pop culture and its legacy that it's left throughout time and continues to build. So before we continue forward, Spencer, give us them
official synopsis goodness.
I was going to see if someone else wanted to say it.
Oh. I was just going to pause. I was like, I don't know what's happening.
Legend. Harry.
Oh, God. That was such an old, I was like, like Legend Neil of the Patrick Hidden Harris is Temple? Not, are you going with that? What are we doing?
Neil Patrick Harris is timeless. Let's be honest. And he's a toy maker.
That's great.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway, transformed into human-sized crime fighters by a mysterious ooze, four baby turtles are trained in martial arts by their rat sensei, a former pet of a ninja master who also encountered the substance. With the help of a local journalist, they work to uncover the source of a crime wave plaguing New York City.
So I let Amy do this synopsis, and I got like three or four movies just out of that. I'm like, okay. So the substance, Demi Moore handed it over to them, and they, you know, all. either way, thank you, Amy, for doing the synopsis. So.
It looked tighter than the other one.
Yeah, I only read part of the other one, but it's like they ran into an ooze called the ooze, and I was like, what?
Yeah, that's the last time I just pull the synopsis directly from just Google instead of going to the website. So.
Yeah, it happens.
Based on the comic book characters created by Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird and directed by Steve Barron and written by Todd W. Langen and Bobby Herbeck, the film stars Judith Hoag and Elias Koteas with the voices of Brian Tochi, Josh Pice, Corey Feldman, and Robbie Rist. A couple of key pieces about the film. We're not going to get into too much detail because this movie's been out for 35 years. But there are still a couple of nuggets of info, such as Robin Williams, who was a big fan of the franchise, provided Judith Hoag with information regarding her character through his comic book collection. The two were co-starring in 1990's Cadillac Man when the Turtles film went into production. So that's actually really cool. I didn't know that. I knew that Robin Williams was a big nerd, like the rest of us, but for him to use his own like comic book, you know, collection and provide feedback and information to the actress to help her with her role was just that's wonderful. Another key piece of information: this was the highest grossing independent film until the Blair Witch Project in 1999. Having made $135 million in domestic box offices and $66 million in the foreign box office. So at the time when you're looking at independent films, you know, everything else at that point was done either by major motion pictures, Warner Brothers, Disney, things like that. This working off of the independent circuit made a good chunk of change. And that's actually pretty, that's going to be notable when we talk about it later on in the conversation. Last piece of information we have here, the actors who physically portrayed the Turtles also had cameo roles in the film. Josh Pice, who played Raphael, plays a passenger in the back of a taxi cab right after Raphael hops on the cab's hood. Michelin Sisti, who plays Michelangelo, plays the pizza delivery man who delivers a pizza to the Turtles' sewer. Leif Tilden, who plays Donatello, plays the foot messenger that meets April in the subway station, and David Foreman, who plays Leonardo, plays a gang member in the warehouse during Casey's fight with Tatsu. He's the one on Tatsu's right who takes a drag of a cigarette. So as we dive into this conversation, it's going to be more so of a discussion about the film rather than a review because, let's be honest, you wouldn't be listening to us if you hadn't seen the Ninja Turtles. Like it kind of comes with the mentality of like, if you've listened to us or you know anything about us, you're probably as big of a nerd as we are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's just put it plainly. We'll call a spade a spade. So we're hoping that you don't need too much context in terms of the conversation we're about to have, as we're going to dive into some aspects of the film, as well as, again, as I stated before, the franchise and its impact in both pop culture and its legacy. Before we do, though, let's talk about our experiences with the TMNT. Now, Spencer, you did mention a little bit ago how your experience before we went on air,
yeah,
that your experience isn't as vast as you'd like, but where does a lot of your TMNT knowledge and experience go, like, is based in? Where's it based in?
So I'm going to say lightly the animated series from the 80s, I believe, which I only vaguely remember because I was very young at the time.
Mm-hmm.
The three movies, and then Mutant Mayhem, and then the series that shall not be named from the 90s, which is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Next Mutation, mm-hmm, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which.
Yeah.
It wasn't good. We'll put it like that. They had a crossover with Power Rangers, though.
They did. I remember that. What about you, Ames? Where does your history lie with the turtles and whatnot?
A large chunk of it was the 80s and 90s cartoon. Then this movie, the second movie, the third movie, the Michael Bay did the one where they were hyper realistic and they were like giant.
Oh, the tanks. Yeah.
Yes. Saw that one. Avoided the Chris Evans one. There's so many.
Chris Evans one.
There was the one that they remade where they were slightly more cartoony, and I thought Chris Evans was in it, unless I'm IMDb being wrong. Someone can keep checking while you do that. I saw a little bit of the early 2000s. We were actually, before we got on air, we're having the conversation of how many Nickelodeon versions of TMNT have been there. Quite a few. Shout out to Rob Paulsen. I appreciate you, my friend. Keeping it real. Mostly media. Oh, and then Mutant Mayhem, which has been such a delight.
Yeah.
And then as I got older, I picked up the comic books and started reading. Of course, there's crossovers. And then there has been The Last Ronin, which is absolutely gorgeous. A lot of my early start was more in TV and movies. But it's kind of been a smattering here or then recently because sometimes there be too much turtle information. And, oh, yes, I did initially start watching that really sketchy 90s one we don't talk about. Was I right about the one I saw?
No, you're completely wrong. There's no Chris Evans anywhere in this. And I think
I'll find it. It's the one where they have like the weird, slightly cartoony face.
No, I know which one you're talking about. It's the one from the 2012 series. I'm sorry. It's the fourth animated series from Nickelodeon called Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Was that the movie?
But, no, that's the show.
No, I was talking about the movie. Hold on.
Spencer, do you know what she's talking about?
I actually don't.
Like, I know the movie.
There is a Rise movie.
So you're talking about that? Wait, are you talking about TMNT?
Yes.
That movie? I don't know.
Chris Evans is Casey Jones. Yeah. And I didn't watch that one.
I did. It was actually good.
Oh, Mako was Splinter? Dang, homie. Okay.
Oh, because it's a voice. That's why.
Because he was a voice.
Because he was a voice.
He was a voice actor for that.
Yeah.
Nothing.
What?
What are you talking about?
Not talking about anything. Just here.
We are here. So
what was the year for that one?
07.
Yay.
07.
And it was just called TMNT.
Yep.
Why is it not popping up? Oh, yeah, here it is. Yep. It was the computer generated one.
Yep.
It was actually really good.
Really?
So in that, quick aside. So in that particular one, at that point, Leo has decided that he can't lead the turtles. He's not worthy of being the leader. So he goes away. Leo actually leaves the family and goes to South America to journey and figure out how he can be a leader. All the while, the remaining turtles, they're no longer doing crime fighting. Donatello is doing, he's doing tech support out of the sewer, like he's doing on phone tech support.
I ain't mad at him. He's a smart turtle.
Michelangelo is doing birthday parties with the turtle van with a big foam head of one of the ninja himself mm-hmm. showing up to birthday parties. And then Raphael is still moonlighting as a vigilante, but one cladded out in like all this metal and armor. And he rides around in a motorcycle doing it with Casey Jones as well.
So Chris Evans and Nolan North are riding around crime fighting in this particular.
So in this particular story, there's a guy who he's this wealthy guy. He ends up bringing these massive statues to his huge company building. April O'Neil is like this research assistant or something for him. It's actually really good. It's fun and it's a much better movie adaptation of a story of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles than anything Michael Bay has done. Wow. Easily and cleanly.
A really hard thing.
I know, but I when mean, you're looking at whole, a like, when you're looking at a movie little, that pretty much no one saw, and you compare it to this multi-million dollar thing that someone should have done well, you tend to put up arms and be like, "Look, come on." But as far as my own experience, so as I stated, I saw the cartoon as a child. I saw all three movies. I learned that a overcooked pizza could be used as a frisbee. I did see like maybe an episode or two of The Next Mutation because it was on the Fox Kids lineup.
Yep.
I did not see any of the series that came out of Nickelodeon minus the more recent one because it was it actually made the jump to Netflix. I did see the 2007 movie, as we stated. I saw, sadly, all of the Michael Bay movies. And then Mutant Mayhem as well. Yeah. And I think that kind of gives a good swath of like the fact of how wide this movie reaches as far as the mediums and whatnot. Because it goes from the movies to, you know, obviously based in comics, as we stated.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Out of Mirage Comics. And then from there adapted into a cartoon that, which then was adapted to a movie, which then was adapted to a TV live action TV show.
Hey, I'm sorry. I don't know if you already said this and I missed it. Did you say you read the comics or no?
I did not. Okay. I haven't read, I've read some of them, not chronologically, like in any particular order, because you don't really find them. Like you can find reprints and whatnot, but most of them are usually in compendiums or graphic novels to see, to like to read the whole sagas of them.
Right.
Cause there's so much that happens in those first few years for the Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird's run that it's night and day compared to what we see in the animated series, let alone the TV series. Honestly, the adaptation of the movie we're talking about in 1990 is more of a adaptation based on the show than it really is based on the based on the comic books. Because a lot of things they do transition differently. Like if you're looking at the comics during that time in the beginning, all the turtles wore red bandanas.
Right.
So yes, there wasn't really a huge difference from there. Also, they were their whole goal was dead set on killing Splinter. Like that was their whole goal. Like they drove towards it, and that was their whole thing. And at one
Shredder,
point,
right?
Huh?
You mean Shredder, right?
What did I say?
Splinter.
Oh, I'm sorry, Shredder, not Splinter.
I just have to make sure that the comics didn't go off the rails.
No, because I believe at some point in time, like something happens to Splinter, and they become like blood focused, like you know, blood in the water, sharks like looking for Shredder.
Rage.
We're hoping, just kind of as an aside, that that's where we're looking at going towards with the next Ninja Turtle movie from the sequel to Mutant Mayhem, because they just introduced Shredder to some point in that storyline. Mm-hmm. But talking about this particular movie, do you guys recall the first time you actually saw this TMNT movie?
It was at my house. And that's as specific as I can be.
Do you recall if it was close to 1990? Was it after? Like, was it years after? Was it months after? Did you have to go to Blockbuster to get it? Was it on TV when you saw it?
I don't know.
You just recall seeing it at home?
Yes.
Thanks.
I can one up that one, just vaguely. I was at home. It was after 1990. It was probably about 5 or 6. And it was a Saturday afternoon movie on Fox.
Mm. Hey, someone else has that experience. And it doesn't have to do with the Santa Claus, the movie.
What? Don't like discount my experience.
That movie has traumatized me.
Out of all the movies I've shown you, that's one.
Until we review Mac and Me, I think that's the one that wins.
What about Wonder Woman 1984?
That was just bad.
Love Actually. This,
Love Actually?
I didn't say it was bad. I just said it traumatized. It's okay. Relax.
Love Actually didn't?
It was bad. That was a bad movie.
Wow.
What's the wow for?
Because you're saying, and this is our aside before we get back into Turtle Town, that's wild. that
Santa Claus the movie
traumatized you worse than Love
Actually? No, I didn't say that.
That's
I
just, what you implied.
I said, like that implied. Listen, both of you. listen, Linda.
Yeah,
listen.
We're listening.
I said that the movie traumatized me. Uh-huh. I didn't say that it traumatized me more than any of these other movies. I just said it traumatized me. Those other movies I said were bad movies.
Yeah, you didn't use the word traumatized.
Yeah.
Okay, let me put it this way. Those movies traumatized me more than anything we've reviewed on this show thus far. The Santa Claus the movie, I don't even know if I'm saying that right. If it's the Santa Claus the movie or Santa Claus the movie. Either way,
there's a colon
watching it.
Yeah, because the Santa Claus is the Tim Allen.
The Santa Claus. Yeah, the Santa Claus.
That's the Tim Allen. But that's the one they called the Santa Claus.
This
movie.
One
it was Santa
was,
Claus the movie.
This one was an entertaining yet annoying kind of traumatizing, but it wasn't a bad movie. Okay? You got me? You hear me?
You said it was a somewhat good movie. It's like it was just traumatizing.
I never said it was good. I just said it wasn't bad.
It's entertaining.
Those movies that we saw included a lot of alcohol, necessary, mind you, and a lot of heartache and trauma and tears. And that's even before we finished the movie. So
we had to come back the second day. But you know what didn't have alcohol necessary to enjoy? You know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from the 90s.
So what were you trying to say? You said you saw it on a Fox Saturday afternoon movie.
Yeah.
How long after? Okay, so it had to have been at least
about five. So five or six, which would have been 91, 92.
So, okay, so it was some decent amount of time after that, like at least
it was available to be watched as a Fox afternoon movie.
Okay. And so that's when you guys remember seeing it. So Spencer, kind of going back to you, and I'll jump in a second. Do you recall like your mentality after you saw it?
No, I'm sorry. I don't store memories in that fashion.
Those are called memories, Spencer.
I just said that.
You don't store those kind of memories?
I said I don't store memories in that fashion.
How do you? Okay.
I love this. This is amazing.
You're like, where and who and like, when was this? And I'm like, I don't know.
I can see why you gravitated to
the cabinet. No.
I can see why you gravitated to technology because you needed something to help you remember. Obviously.
I do put a lot of things on my calendar.
There you go.
Works.
So did you see it recently? Obviously for this episode.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry. You didn't recall the first time. So
this time it happened this week.
Okay. So you saw it recently.
Yes.
So what were some of the things that you were reminded of as far as nostalgia when you saw this movie?
Nostalgia? Man, that's actually a really hard question. Because I don't know. There's something about Casey Jones in this movie where I'm like, yes, but then nothing. nothing's attached to it. Like, I remember you looking like that.
That's so mean.
No, what? He looks like that.
Because he doesn't look like that now.
No, he does not. I looked up a recent photo.
My God.
Oh, yeah, 35 years have passed.
We don't talk about those 35 years.
Which is wild because, he's forever stuck like that in my head.
Yeah. 100%. Every time I see him in other movies or he appears, I'm like, ooh. what? Where's your hockey stick, man?
I literally, when I was watching this, I was like, yeah, I remember him. And then I was like, I don't remember you. And I did the look too. And I was like, no, that's not you, sir. That can't be you, right? No.
So,
put a mask.
Because the funny thing is, I didn't realize it up until as of late, within the last couple of years, when I was watching. So I used to watch Chicago Med, which is a show on NBC, and Chicago Fire, which is also, it's all within that whole Chicago franchise. They also do one called Chicago PD, and he's on there.
I don't know why I thought you were going to say Chicago Pizza.
Wow.
Well, I mean, that Domino's, they really, really did sell us on Domino's.
Anyway. In Chicago PD, he's almost unrecognizable because he has this handlebar mustache thing going on. And it's very interesting. So either way, continue.
Yeah, they should do a Chicago Pizza. That'd be probably an interesting.
You're saying Domino's should do.
No.
No, just in general.
No, NBC. Should do
A show called Chicago Pizza. So they have Chicago Med, Chicago Fire, Chicago PD, and now Chicago Pizza.
Yeah.
There you go.
And it's about a delivery driver going between each show.
I kind of love that. That's how you That's how you get your crossovers right there, baby.
Every week.
Nice and consistent.
Hey. I'm sorry, what was your question?
So
he was asking nostalgia, what you remember.
So was that one of the more nostalgic things that you kind of derived from when you saw it recently? Like, oh yeah, I remember Casey Jones.
Yeah, Casey Jones, certain lines, like I remember that was pretty much it.
What about you, Ames? Because I know you saw it as well recently.
Yes. So I remember the Domino's pizza guy, because which was funny on this watch when Mikey's doing the order, he's asking for stuffed crust. And I was like, oh yeah, because part of this was also the time when we had Book It for Pizza Hut. And I was like, stuffed crust. Okay. And then I was like, but when he hung up the phone, I was like, wait, it's a Domino's delivery guy. They didn't have stuffed crust. And so when it happened and I saw him again, I was like, I was right. I remembered this right. You can't take this away from me. Also, I remembered the front of the house, the farmhouse, when they, you know, run away, air quotes, to the farmhouse. I was like, oh, yeah, I remember this house. And then I was like, oh, I must have like blocked out sections of it because I didn't remember all of it in that regard. So I was like, okay, I remember this. And then I remember being super jealous of the, and it's all guys, there's no girls, which sucked, but the
the
Isle of Lost Boys or whatever that they did at the Foot Clan's like location. Oh, where it was like all the video games.
What'd you call it, the Isle? I don't think it was ever called the Isle. It was called the Island of Lost Toys?
No. Pinocchio.
That one.
Oh.
Where he goes with Lampwick and it's literally like some ridiculous island, yada, yada. But it's legitimately everybody, like this lair has everything.
Pleasure Island?
There you go. Thanks.
Nothing about Island of Lost Boys, but
it was a lot of that dudes.
Sounds, I feel like Lost Boys is too on the nose.
Yeah, that's
well, for what? this movie,
those boys were lost. No,
emotionally,
no.
But no. But I remember.
Sounds like the beginning of a lawsuit. God. Okay, thanks. Keep going.
So basically, I remember being super jealous because I was like, "This looks super cool," and I really liked it. And then I think somewhere in my brain too, it overlapped with the Lost Boys from Hook, mm-hmm. where like there was the ramps and everyone was like having a great time. And I was like, dang. And then I'm watching it recently. I was like, dang, it still looks like Hook. Yeah, I don't want to go there.
Oh my God. In the recent viewing, so I do recall when I saw it, because I saw it in theaters when I was a kid. I remember as a kid, like expecting to see the cartoon being portrayed out in the movie, and it wasn't really the case. But it was still a really fun movie. And I think the biggest thing for me as to why I was able to go see it was because at the time my dad was a big Bruce Lee fan, and the same studio that produced and distributed all of Bruce Lee's movies also produced and distributed this one. Well, they produced it. It was distributed by New Line Cinema. So Golden Harvest Entertainment Company was the one who brought this story kind of to life and funded it and whatnot. And so the idea behind it was, you know, if it was anything by Golden Harvest and if it was good enough for Bruce Lee, then it's good enough for our viewing eyes as well. So we saw it, and I remember seeing it. It was really fun, and I do recall getting the blister container for the VHS. We bought it when it came out, so we saw it all the time. In fact, I remember seeing this one and then getting, I don't know if you guys remember those tapes that they would make about the behind the scenes footage for the three movies. So they did one for each movie, and they did one specifically for this one as well. Not too long after the movie dropped on VHS. So it was just a VHS cassette that had like, it was like the making of the whatever or whatnot. Like, cause I remember the second one was like the making of the ooze or something. And it kind of went in behind the scenes, like how the animatronics was done, how some of the stunts were done, the voices that were behind most of the characters, things like that. It was super cool. Seeing it recently, I think one of the more triggering things that I've kind of encountered when rewatching it, as far as nostalgia goes, is how much the ridiculousness of the things these guys say were like off the wall stuff that as a kid, I probably just repeated because of the fact that it was just funny and it made me laugh. And then re-listening to it now, and it's like, you know, the situations and the stuff that they say, like I find myself laughing super hard at most of it. The way they make fun of each other and the way they talk about each other. And it's like, I really do miss a lot of those jokes and just that kind of humor in nowadays movies. And obviously it won't work in nowadays films because stuff from the past. But I think the biggest thing for me was like kind of revisiting a lot of those older moments, like how often Raphael gets so pissed off at himself for no reason. but yet to everyone else, it's like, oh, that's just Raph. And it's like, this dude got his butt whooped on top of a roof all because you guys didn't want to check on him. And you guys are being chased by this whatever entity that took your dad. so sure, let him go off by himself and not worry about it. Also, the fact that I didn't recall it as much this time around, or I didn't recall it when I was a kid, but I recalled it much more at this time. I know that obviously they're not teenagers that are playing these people, but some of the mentalities that these characters have make me think maybe they are actually supposed to be teenagers. They're so focused on the immaturity and the ridiculousness and like obviously what older women, you know, the allurement of
babe.
Yeah, it's like
Spencer, you're like the face.
I don't know. Sometimes it's hard to tell how old people are relative to animatronics.
Good point.
I was like, I don't know how old this April lady's supposed to be, but like, you know.
Yeah, you know, all of them were like all so head over heels for her in that movie. Like as the characters, they were. It was one rating short of a horn dog movie. Let's be honest. And for all good reasons, obviously the way they make this movie, there is a focus on like, oh, you know, they're all enthralled with April. Like every single one of them has an infatuation with her. Mm-hmm. But moving to kind of like some of our points about this film, I did mention like the animatronic suits. So I don't know if you guys know Jim Henson, who's done incredible puppet work with previous things such as Sesame Street, the Storykeepers, Labyrinth.
Yeah, the Storyteller.
Storyteller, sorry.
Labyrinth, Dark Crystal.
Amy's going to essentially...
Keep talking.
No, go ahead.
Because it was the Jim Henson Creature Shop, and it wasn't just Jim Henson, but the product...
Seeing as I didn't get a chance to get to that, go ahead.
I just got really excited because we're talking about Jim Henson and the work that went into this, which it only took them 18 weeks. Was absolutely bonkers to get through.
Yeah.
Because 18 weeks, that's crazy. 18
weeks, and they were like with computers in their heads. Like, oh. Well,
computers, servos, you had motors, you had, you know, all nuts. Pivots.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. apparently, it sounds like you did research. So tell us, intern of research.
Okay. So, Spencer, they had designed these... initially they designed them out of fiberglass, mm-hmm. and then they ended up putting them in molds to make them lighter. So they did very different versions so that there would be some that were static heads and lighter costuming so that the performance, the actors that were in the costumes could actually move around. But to get the animatronic heads to work, they actually had, and I always laugh because when you see the pictures of it, it looks nuts, but they had a helmet off on the one that they had built that essentially... what they could put on the other actor's face, mm-hmm. or the other assistant puppeteer, and they could talk and it would move their eyes and make the expressions and everything. And I was just like, this is so cool. This is so weird and cool.
Okay. Yeah. A lot of, and the fact is like most of those suits, because it goes back to the whole man in suit kind of conundrum. as you are working and, you know, sweating, and because the majority of those suits were basically foam. And as they were sweating everything, those suits got waterlogged. They would get heavy. You had a lot of like expensive electronics in the, you know, head portion where most of the sweat comes from for most folks. And things would have to get replaced. Things would have to get changed. The majority of all the actors that were on set when they were filming, their only point of reference to see was out of the mouth, which if you take a closer look at one of the scenes.
Yeah, I noticed that for the first time this time.
Yeah, you see where Donatello opens his mouth wide and you see the two eyes. It looks like something straight out of Beetlejuice.
It's a little funny, though.
Oh, yeah, extremely funny. And it's like, but it kind of highlights the fact of, like, at that point in time, we were, what, 3 years away from Jurassic Park?
Yeah.
And the whole effort of creating animatronics to this extent was groundbreaking. Like, you're creating things that move and emote and can be functional to where people are supposed to be doing martial arts in these, you know, costumes, in these whole rigs. And it's really cool. Like, honestly, if you ever get a chance, sadly, most of those heads have deteriorated, obviously, with that foam. That foam gets really brittle if it's not taken care of and will essentially just turn to dust.
Disintegrates, yeah.
And it looks like something straight out of Five Nights at Freddy at that point.
Legitimately.
But they're super complex. And they only got more complex as, like, when the second movie came into play and whatnot. The third movie, I don't think as much. In fact, I think they were actually shorted on cash, on funds to actually do more complex animatronics in that one, and rightly so. If you've seen the third film, you know why. So Turtles in Time is on nobody's, you know, wish list this year. But the fact is like, you're looking at incredible work coming out of Jim Henson's Creature Shop. Again, the same people who did the Muppets. They've done not just the Dark Crystal and Labyrinth. There's another one. Yes, Amy.
Which one?
Well, I'm asking the intern who's supposed to be doing.
I don't know. Do you want TV or do you want movies?
Why don't you just give us everything?
Well, you've got Fraggle Rock. You've already brought up Sesame Street. All of the Muppets, just mm-hmm. across the board. So that includes the Muppet movies. Was it J.P. Otter and the Junkyard Band? There's a Christmas one. You brought up Labyrinth, Dark Crystal, Mirror Mask, which had some animatronics, but it was more CG, and it was more in the late 90s, early 2000s. And I mean, technically they were also using animatronics at that time over for the Muppet 3D show.
Oh yeah, at the show in Disneyland.
Yeah.
Which sadly closed down this year.
Yes, officially.
But speaking of violence and whatnot, because that was a great show, unfortunately. That does bring us kind of to the cultural impact of what this movie and what this franchise as a whole has done. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we're looking at its impact throughout history, cinematic or even just, let's just say pop culture history. I mean, the Turtles have impacted just about everything. From the subsequent sequels to this movie, mm-hmm. where we got the wonderful appearance of Vanilla Ice doing the Go Ninja, Go Ninja,
the
Go.
Ninja rap.
And Kevin Nash appearing as Shredder.
Even though he's dead at the end of this one.
Yeah. Which is so insane, the fact that you realize that it's Kevin Nash as the Shredder, this tall white guy who's portraying it. Yeah, it's you know, hey. Fun stuff.
Well, I mean, he got oozed, so.
He did. I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
To the TV series that Spencer was talking about, the one that he aptly loved so much, The Next Mutation, which was a very interesting show, to say the least. I don't think we've talked about it here, have we?
No.
We did at some point because we brought it up. And we had that conversation of how ridiculous it was. Like, the entire push to just bring in a girl, and they had to have a girl. And I remember being so frustrated about it. Also, they had changed the splinter puppet and made him leaner. like, and I'm not saying fur leaner wise, but it literally looked like his animatronics had changed enough that I was like, this doesn't look like my Splinter. Who are you? And then they're all
they have
a love interest and she's another turtle. Like,
No, she wasn't a love interest. I don't think she was a love interest, was she?
There was something weird going on.
That's the problem. Because I remember it was like, the Master Splinter's like, we're bringing her in here to train with you guys. You know, she's your sister or something like that. And then somebody was like, she's hot. And I'm like, oh.
Who would have said that?
Mikey.
It was so rando. But I remember being so, I was so mad at it too, because everybody had been defined by colors. She comes in with like baby blue.
Yeah.
And then she had the added belt with the symbol. And then her bandana in the back was braids. And I was like, you guys, why can't you just have a bandana?
And you forgot she's psychic as well.
That's right.
There she is.
Yeah.
Spencer's
she is the forgotten turtle.
Spencer's original awakening.
No,
one of the rudest things you've said to me on this podcast.
I've tried. I know. But the fact is like it was a series, and it lasted for how long?
4 seconds.
Are we talking about just TMNT in?
Oh, it only ran a year.
That's why I said 4 seconds.
It started, I think it was the first one or two episodes. Like you said, you saw the first one or two, and it was literally everybody watched those and were like, yeah, we're good. Thanks, Fox. Sorry. And I feel bad, but
I don't think anyone else feels bad.
No, they also changed the logo. It was not the classic one. It was a new one.
And then also right after the show, you had the concert tour.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if anybody's going to remember any kind of traumatization.
Wasn't there somebody that was like...
It was their promotion on Oprah where...
Oh, my God.
You just said something and I swear the cringe from the like the wince and the lean. Oh, Spencer, are you okay? You were like shielding yourself.
No, because he knows exactly what I was about to say. The cringe on that conversation that they had where Michelangelo, I don't know if they were given scripts. They should have been given scripts, because they were talking about April in a certain sort of way. And then Michelangelo said that they were having conversations about cross species relations or something like that on Oprah with kids in the front row.
Yeah. Didn't they like have a Zoom in?
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 It's like the whole, like it was insane. And the fact that they actually continue to go through and create like a lasting tour that went on for a little while. It's wild for me. And I don't even, well, it's not actually from the original tour, but you have, didn't I get you 1 year?
Yeah, you did.
What came in it?
Let's see. There was a concert ticket. It was a shirt. There was a lanyard in the bag. And I feel like there was one other thing I'm forgetting.
I don't.
It was cool though. Thank you.
Yeah. It was a special edition kind of thing that came out for San Diego Comic-Con for TMNT for some reason, but it was kind of a throwback to that concert tour. Yeah, the songs were ridiculous. I don't even know like some of the names. What is it?
I'm sorry. I was like, because I remember since you talked about the Oprah thing, I was like, oh, yeah. I need to load this into my YouTube to like watch this after the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the thumbnails is of the kid just like zoomed in, just like with a horrific look on his face. It's really bad.
Not to mention those suits there's another thumbnail right beneath it that's like of one of the suits. Those suits were scary.
Yeah, they were, but they also were the ones that they were going to be on tour with, so it makes sense to use them. But like, you know, they probably never were designed to be up front and personal with anybody.
Yeah,
extra close.
Yeah.
Also around that time, kind of one of the bigger things that people were kind of gravitating to as well was the video game, like the arcade game.
Oh, those were amazing.
Like that arcade game, like I would spend as long as I could just playing that arcade game. I never beat it. I wasn't that good. But the arcade game was so much fun. It was like, what was it? Turtles in Time?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Turtles in Time.
Right?
That game is amazing.
So what was the third movie called?
Turtles in Time.
I'm pretty sure. Are we sure?
That's what happens when you find a scepter and you get sucked into Beetlejuice. Bam. Way to go, April.
Which, again, because that movie had time travel in it, it was one of my favorite movies as a child.
The video game was called Turtles in Time, and then TMNT 3. No, that's 2. Turtles in Time.
Yeah.
Which is nothing based on the movie.
Nope.
Yeah, there's nothing.
No, the game, actually, you went to different time periods and places, not just feudal Japan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. which, honestly, was based on kind of a concept that Peter Laird and Kevin Eastman were working on for a possible storyline that they were building towards in the comics at the time. But obviously that didn't get off the ground. Or actually, I think it did, but not too far because I think the movie kind of put the kibosh on any further stories.
Yeah, that's not surprising in the slightest.
But yeah, I think the arcade games and the cabinets were a lot more memorable to me than the actual at-home console games. I don't remember really playing any at-home console games.
No, the Turtles in Time, they did port.
To the NES or the Super NES?
Super NES. Mm. Because I remember playing that one at my house from Blockbuster.
Ah, okay.
Blockbuster.
And then, as Amy mentioned, obviously the reboot cartoons that were done through Nickelodeon, there was like 3 or 4 of them. I know there was one that was on Netflix or ended up on Netflix. And then we got the interesting reboot, if you will, from Michael Bay with a more hyper realistic turtle. And what's his name? Oddly enough, from Chicago Med, one of the doctors, he played Shredder in that franchise.
That doesn't help us.
I forget his name. All I know is his name is Dr. Choi in the movie.
Oh, yeah. Or in the show. He's really nice.
It was great.
He's been acting for a very long time, too.
Like, I don't think Spencer's seen that.
You'll see a picture and you'll be like, I can place him in a movie or 2 or 3. But yeah, that literally the one thing I remember from that Michael Bay Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is them in the elevator. And then the behind the scenes where they showed the guys in their mocap and they had the big turtle packs and they were just running. And I was like, guys.
Brian T.
Yay.
May have seen him before. I don't know. Possibly. But yeah, he played the Shredder in that one. That was also the one where they were trying to introduce Krang into the second one, and it didn't work. Yeah, it was bad. But yeah, and then obviously we got in the more recent iteration of it, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem film, which was fun and very more accurate to the teenage mentality, with Ayo Itabiri and then as well as Jackie Chan, who played Splinter, with a slew of other people who actually did a really great job in the vocal casting, everything from Ice Cube to John Cena to Post Malone to Paul Rudd.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, it had a really great vocal cast. Giancarlo Esposito even had a role earlier on in the film. It was super cool. And that's kind of the direction we're going now. I don't know if you guys know it or if you guys have read any of the comics of it, but currently there's a very popular miniseries that ran in the comics called The Last Ronin.
I brought it up briefly at the beginning, but bring it up.
Well, The Last Ronin takes place a couple years. It's in a specific pocket universe for the Turtles. It's not so much in the main canon. But at a certain point in time, ultimately, you are coming to find out that none of the Turtles are in New York. New York has been completely overran. Not only by the Shredder, but also by, what is the name of that company? The one that makes the mouse bots and all that?
Oh my gosh. You asked me a question and I know and I can see
you have a
the
phone
logo
right in front of you.
I know, but I can see the logo in my head and I can't.
Because it's also mentioned in the second Ninja Turtle movie. But Splinter ultimately takes over that organization as well. And in the course of all of that, he's pretty much ruled all over New York.
Back, well, they're developed by Baxter Stockman. Darn it.
But he,
I know. I'm still looking.
So in the comics, there's no protector of anybody. Everything is kind of like, and the only people who are doing anything is April O'Neil and Casey Jones at the time. But they're literally like, they're leading a rebellion of people. And one of the turtles comes back and you come to find out that the other three have actually died in combat. And that's the reason why this particular turtle is left. And he's come back to wage war while the story kind of sets it up that he's coming back ultimately to die honorably because he left in a dishonorable way. But in him coming back, it creates this whole story and he ultimately becomes the last Ronin, so to speak. Kind of like how in the olden times, like older samurai films, you have the one lone swordsman who comes to town, the lone gunman in the Western movies who comes to town and cleans things up kind of thing. Same focus, same mentality, actually really good. And in fact, it was so well received that it actually got the green light to be adapted into a movie, into an R-rated Ninja Turtle movie. Okay, that went from, There's a lot of like action sequences and like perilous situations and, let's be honest, blood in that storyline that there really would only be one way to tell it. And the good thing about it is that it's kind of, it lives in this pocket universe where you don't need to read everything else about the Ninja Turtles to just grasp what's happening in the enormity of this situation. So it's actually pretty cool. I'm actually excited about it. Did you ever figure out the name of that company?
Stock Gen was the one that was in the comic books, but I couldn't remember what it was in Mutant Mayhem. That's my bad. I almost got there. Research. Yeah.
Techno Global Research Industries, TGRI. So.
Yeah.
I found it.
Because for the comic books, it's Techno Cosmic Research Institute. Dun dun dun.
So yeah. In terms of like its impact, like what do you guys feel is like the biggest impact it's had regarding culture-wise, pop culture or culture? What do you think is one of the big moments that the Turtles have had in the history that we've seen for this franchise? Like I can go first and say the fact that Vanilla Ice made a song about it and a dance, and the fact that people are still kind of talking about it even now, says a lot of stuff. I think that moment alone birthed the tours that came out after the fact. Oh my God, if Vanilla Ice could do this with them, the Turtles could do it by themselves and just go on tour.
I thought the tour was after the first movie and not the second one. Because what I was seeing was that that arena's out of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles out of their shell. Musical tour of the arenas was from 1990. And yeah, I love that.
This because the second you said the title, I remember the song Out of Our Shell. My gosh. 90s Ninja Turtles was a fever dream at like certain points because you're just like, why did anyone do some of these things? Seriously, though, take a look at that old interview.
No, seriously, why?
Go watch the interview.
Yeah.
Use the Google machine. Go to the YouTubes.
Well, The Secret of the Ooze came out in 91. And so, then...
there was only a year space between these two movies.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh. And then the second run of the Coming Out of Their Shell, or Getting Down in Your Town tour came out in 92.
So in other words,
Getting Down in Your Town tour.
Out of Their Shell was 1990.
Cross species relations.
No, because the one that they did for Oprah, was it Out of Their Shell or was it the Get Down in Your Town? Because there was the first movie, then there was the Out of Their Shell, Then there was the second movie, and then the Get Down in Your Town. This is so insane.
Well, because it looks
literally
like
looking at this. We're like, listen, chronologically, how did we sandwich these movies? How did we prepare people for arena shenanigans?
Listen, there's no real way to prepare anyone for any of this nonsense.
100%. I agree. If we're asking about impact, though, I would love to throw my hat into the ring for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles supporting the Pizza Wars of the 1990s. Not only did they throw their hat into Domino's, but more often we think of Pizza Hut when we think of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which is kind of funny. But
I mean, let's be honest. Ninja Turtles created a super unrealistic expectation for pizza. Like I expected Pizza Hut to always look like that. And I think it just made it difficult for Pizza Hut to maintain their allure. Like, because it's like those pulls from the TV show alone were like, come on.
The cartoon cheese pulls were insane.
And I'm not going to lie, but I'm glad I'm much more refined in my palate now. But let's be honest. The cartoon show made sushi look gross. And it's sad because I'm like, he made himself a bento box. And it's like, Splinter has his own food. But yeah, it was interesting to see that. So, but yeah, I do agree with you on that one.
Yeah. Pizza seemed to be the most realistic when it comes to it. And if we're looking farther forward, I think the longevity, as well as the PR for Ninja Turtles, especially coming out of the 80s through the 90s, and that it's carried into the 2000s. We're literally, oh Lord, we're in the 2000s. I'm not saying where. We're in the 2000s. But going from 1990 to now, I don't think there has really been any true bad sections of this fandom that I know of.
We just talked about the concert tours.
I mean of the fandom.
I agree. I don't think there's really a toxicity aspect of what this fandom holds. But then again, I mean, there's always that one. Who knows? What about you, Spencer? What do you think was one of the bigger kind of pop cultural impacts from this franchise?
Man. For better or worse, I really feel like the Michael Bay movies kind of kept them in relevance with the general public, even though I never saw them because I was like, what the hell is this? So even though they might not have been my cup of tea, I feel like overall it was a good thing.
Spencer, you're not wrong. It was nobody's cup of tea. Like it is. I think there's, okay, to piggyback on what you're saying, I think there's a bigger outcry for how much it distorted the franchise than there really is love and appreciation for the movies, which that, I think, in itself is what kept the momentum and the relevancy, if you will, of the franchise going from that point moving forward. Because let's be honest, all we had at that point after that was maybe some of the cartoons, which didn't always hit, and the movies, which at that point were at least 20, 25 years old at that point. And then I think we had the TMNT movie. Because when was the first Michael Bay Teenage Mutant Ninja movie?
08, 09, somewhere around there, I want to say.
Seriously?
Yeah, because it was literally because the one that we talked about with Chris Evans, that was the animated one. And he's saying Chris Evans. That was 07.
Yeah.
And it was literally.
Stop saying Chris Evans.
Because that was the thing. He was in that. And so he was Casey Jones.
So was Sarah Michelle Gellar.
I was 14.
Yeah.
See, the funny thing is I felt like those two backed up against one another in such a way that one overshadowed the other.
And then the one that was a sequel to that was 2016.
Oh.
Yeah, but you're also missing Sarah Michelle Gellar, Mako, Kevin Smith, Patrick Stewart, Lawrence Fishburne. There's a lot of other people you could mention. I could definitely say, yeah, Lawrence Fishburne's TMNT. I'd rather say that. Or Patrick Stewart. Let's say Sir Patrick Stewart's TMNT.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He plays a bad guy.
Which, it's insane. So Winters. You're saying the first Michael Bay TMNT movie was 2014?
Yes.
We had 7 years. So we had 7 years. And the problem is that, again, it was a Nickelodeon produced movie.
The Michael Bay one?
No. I'm sorry. The 2007 one.
Okay.
Yes. It was a Nickelodeon produced one. It was in a computer generated style. So I think it immediately turned people off. Like people didn't want to go see it, but it actually has a great story element to it. And it was really fun. And the nature of like, there's a whole scene. Okay. Spoiler alert if you haven't seen it, but there's a whole scene in there where obviously Leonardo comes back to the fold. They don't really want anything to do with him because he's abandoned them all this entire time. Raphael still is just doing his own thing. He doesn't feel like he needs a leader. And it comes to a point to where Leonardo confronts the masked vigilante and it's atop a rainy rooftop and they actually have a whole fight and it's actually done really well. So it's one of those elements where like it was just a simplistic yet beautiful story. And I don't know why it didn't get as much traction as it should have. The 2014 movie was hot trash. They didn't need to be urban. They didn't need to be like Michael Bay ultimately made them black. I'm going to put it plainly. He made the turtles black.
But weren't all the mocap guys white?
Yeah. And these guys, they had dreads or they had like certain elements that made them more akin to like African culture. And yet they were trained in the art of ninjutsu. And it's like, and then I even forget, oh, the other aspect, Splinter was played by Tony Shalhoub.
Oh no.
Yes.
I love Tony Shalhoub. Why?
It also had, what's his name? Will Forte in it as well.
I love Tony Shalhoub.
Oh, do you guys remember? Do you guys remember Baxter Stockman from the cartoons?
Yeah.
The second one, he was played by Tyler Perry. I kid you not. I kid you not. Look at the credits. Look at the cast list from the second film. Baxter Stockman is played by Tyler freaking Perry.
I can't.
Madea, all up in this beezy.
Out of his shell.
Getting down well, in your town.
No, he's in a lot of hot water, so he better not be getting down anywhere.
Oh, is he?
Oh yeah, he's in trouble right now. But yeah, I think to your point, going back to what we were talking about all about this, I think to your point, Spencer, I think the movies brought the relevancy of the fact that we needed a more stylized TMNT movie that fans actually wanted to see, yeah. Not just one that had all the special effects and was, you know, cost all the monies and had all the explosions that were probably done in the island and in every Transformer movie. And he reused it for this film because we know Michael Bay likes to reuse his stuff. The fact is like the fandom were crying out for something better and we got Mutant Mayhem.
And it's which, fantastic.
Which, yeah. Oddly enough, you know, exactly. It was great. But then there's still people who are like, oh, this isn't my turtles. It's not the way I remember it. Like there's still people out there. Like, if you go look at some of the reviews on there, people are dumb. Like, I don't get it.
Well, that's been a problem for a while.
Yeah. Which goes back to kind of the statement that Amy mentioned earlier about, you know, the negative aspect of this fandom. I think it does exist. It's just in those small pockets and whatnot.
Well, it's the same thing. We have a conversation about the old guard versus, you know, being open to accepting everyone into your fandom. There's no way that we can sugarcoat it. We are older and there are young people that are coming into this fandom. And the last thing they need is someone's like, that, you know, this is really crappy because it's not what I want. Like, I get it. It's yucking your yum, but it could be somebody else's yum. So get off your high horse and let people come in and experience the turtles as they will.
I think that's the case. What was that face for?
I pulled up Michael Bay's IMDb page.
Did you see a picture of the turtles?
No, I saw the picture of the turtles. I was just looking up other things he had done because I thought he directed it and he didn't. He was a producer on those movies.
On those movies?
Yeah.
Oh, he didn't do them.
No, he's just a producer.
So who directed those?
I need to go back.
Who do we need to blame?
Full cast, where's director? Jonathan Liebesman?
Off with his head. Off with his head. But what was the face for?
Okay, so I was looking at, well, what did he actually direct? Upcoming, he's got the untitled Skibidi Toilet movie coming
up.
Oh,
Lord, send us away.
I was like, okay,
dear Lord, make me bird.
Maybe he has a better like film history than I remember.
As soon as you said Skibidi, I was out.
And
I'm out.
What, he's got two shorts listed for Victoria's Secret.
That what? Was the
look you saw.
What?
And I was like, yeah, this is really on brand for how I view Michael Bay.
Well, speaking about being violent to somebody, one of the things I did want to mention, although nowadays, and I did obviously like with the 2007 animated movie, there's a lot more action and a sense of violence to the movies nowadays when it comes to the TMNT films, even the series. But back then during the 90s, you were looking at a adaptation of a cartoon, which wasn't too violent, because I mean, I personally think at the time the mentality was, it's a cartoon, how violent could it be?
Yeah,
you know. But when you created the adaptation done by Golden Harvest, there was actually a lot of outcry after the fact of that movie, where they were saying that there was a problem with violence. Mm-hmm. Which I have trouble. And mind you, it's mostly based in the fact, again, I grew up watching martial arts films. I saw like the Shaw Brothers types movies. I saw the Golden Harvest movies. You know, I saw a lot of those, like the Jet Li movies. I saw Bruce Lee, Jackie Chan, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Steven Seagal. Like at the time, like I had seen all the other kind of action movies with a martial arts aesthetic, Chuck Norris. so I don't really know if I could say that this movie was violent, but it did create a violent outcry regarding like the first film. Do you guys think that there was actually a worthy reason to have that concern?
Well, that's really hard to say because we're kind of looking at it through the lens of time. Mm. Like, because really you'd have to be like, well, what were children's films prior to this normally like? And I don't know. It was the 80s, so people were coked out of their minds. So it's really hard for me to imagine, oh, there wasn't a whole bunch of violence and this is kind of normal for you guys.
We see you, Last Unicorn.
What? What's
the last Unicorn. You didn't do that one. Okay. It's okay. There was violence in that one. Like, there's a reason the Black Cauldron, you know.
I mean, if we're being honest, during that entire era of, like, animated movies, there was a lot of violence.
There was so much.
Like, I mean, Sharptooth was violent. Mm-hmm. Like in The Land Before Time.
I never saw that.
Oh my God. Wait, you've never seen The Land Before Time?
No.
How have you lasted this long and not seen that Don Bluth classic?
I thought it was a movie for babies.
No.
Oh, no. Spencer, it is not a movie for babies.
You know, kind of like, that movie? Barney's like first movie adventure.
This is completely different than that. Yeah. This is
wholly different.
Yeah. Barney can go and like suck an egg compared to this movie. This movie is like, this is one of those movies where you really can only see it once. Cause it'll,
oh, if it's like freaking Grave of the Fireflies, No.
It's not to that extent.
It's, no, it's just like, it's one of those like emotional roller coasters where you can watch it once and you're like, okay, cool. I saw it.
I got it. I'm okay. I don't need to see
it. I'm just really surprised you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
We need to change that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What about Secret of Nim?
No.
Spencer.
Listen, I was a poor child.
Saw freaking Santa Claus the movie, but
it came on free over the TV.
They were Fox movies.
Not here.
Fox animation movie. Oh, okay. You live in a completely different country where these weren't available.
Listen, Texas boy, I don't have the same.
In Central Park?
No. But I've seen clips from that movie.
Okay. We're literally going to do like an animation. We're going to do an.
Those two.
Okay, so you saw those two. So that's the same company as Land Before Time, but like All Dogs Go to Heaven?
Yeah, I've seen that
one. Okay, same group.
Yeah, the violence in that first movie with the Flash Gordon ray gun, quote unquote,
oh my gosh,
that was in that movie where he has literally a Tommy gun shooting at. Do you not recall that part in the movie?
No.
Uh-oh.
Where he's, what's the name of Burt Reynolds' character, the dog?
Charlie.
That's right. He's trying
Charlie and Itchy.
Yeah. Itchy or Scratchy? No, Itchy.
Scratchy's Simpsons. Yeah. Itchy is the name of Dom DeLuise.
Where Carface, which is the bad guy, has his henchmen take his Flash Gordon, quote unquote, ray gun, which is essentially a Tommy gun, and he uses it to try to gun down Charlie.
What the hell?
It's in the movie you saw.
No.
You are pure, pure angel, baby.
How do you not recall that part?
All I remember is the girl died at the end of the movie.
Oh.
Nobody died at the end of the movie.
Then why is it called All Dogs Go to Heaven?
Because the dog goes to heaven at the end of the movie.
Goes to heaven.
What, do you think he took the girl with him? What the heck?
Oh, no.
Wow.
Where do you think All Dogs Go to Heaven 2 comes from? Charlie comes back.
I don't think I saw that one.
Yeah, well.
I got some Don Bluth for you, but especially Land Before Time.
So I think we're going to... Wait, didn't we do a Don Bluth?
That was separately. That was intern-centric.
So I think we're going to have to do a like animation domination kind of Don Bluth focus one of these upcoming months.
We're watching Thumbelina. Yes.
I've never heard anyone say yes to Thumbelina.
That's you got to be careful. Oh, that's Amy's favorite cartoon. Okay. Her favorite animated movie.
Jodie Benson.
Oh, okay.
Jodie Benson is Thumbelina. It is fantastic. Oh my gosh. Sorry.
So excited.
I just grabbed the table. I'm so excited. Sorry, we were talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and then we pivoted to Don Bluth. We're putting it on the calendar.
We're gonna have to put it on the calendar. I think during the time though, you look at like even like we're talking about some of the animated films that came out around that time. I mean, you look at what is that one? Watership Down was an animated movie that came out around that time, and that was super dark. I'm looking at you, Spencer, and I already know you haven't seen it. Yeah, of course not. No. Of course not.
Stay safe.
Yeah,
that's great with the fireflies.
Let him experience it. Yes.
No.
Mister, I saw Santa Claus the movie.
It's not Grave of the Fireflies.
It's not Grave of the Fireflies. It's Watership Down. But like, I think there was enough violence during that time in not only just cartoons and whatnot, but even on TV. I mean, we had the rise of, you know, shows that were about fighting crime or fighting people, you know, Power Rangers, Big Bad Beetleborgs. You know, you had there was a show on Fox that was a specific, was it Kamen Riders? No, it was.
Kamen Riders was a show. Yeah.
No, well, I'm trying to remember. There's one specific show that they did that was.
Give me a little more.
It was about a guy on a motorcycle. Like he looked like.
Sounds like Kamen Rider.
Well, it was on for a little bit. It was this one kid. It was actually part, they did a collaboration with Power Rangers at one point in time. I forget. Look it up. Someone look it up. We have an intern for a reason. But like, I think at the time we had a lot of already kind of violent shows, not to mention, I mean, any kind of daytime TV, whatever that was on was violent enough with the craziness that was going on there. So
are you talking about regular, like when you go sick at home and it's after Price is Right and it's all, there was some drama. Oh my goodness.
I think
so. Just like I wasn't allowed to stay home.
Oh, I did stay home, and I do remember Price is Right. And then after that, we had I Love Lucy.
Wow, you're lucky.
You didn't have like the talk shows like Ricky Lake or Sally Jesse Raphael, or
but that was more in the afternoon for me. But yeah. I had like General Hospital.
Well, because they had
as the world turns.
She had like the soap operas where it's like
it just happened, and I was like PBS, where are you PBS?
No, that's when they're running their boring program, not like aimed at kids who are sick.
Yes. You're just like, can you just support me for a little bit? I need something and something pure. There was violence. There was a lot of violence. And I think at the time, when it comes to the movies that were around for children, they weren't really shying away from having those conversations. Now, expressing it in the media. But when it comes to this movie in particular, this is no less violent. Like, I think this is even tamer than some of the other stuff that I remember watching. Mm. Like, I do remember there was a very big flood of people that suddenly wanted to learn ninja And that was what they would say instead of ninjutsu or karate or whatever else. I just remember everybody's like, I'm learning ninja. But wouldn't that be more of an encouragement to somebody that their child wants to learn a discipline out of a movie?
I think, though, at the time, so I see both sides of the coin. I do agree that the media at the time was already flooded with violent things enough as it is at that point. Did you figure it out, by the way?
Yes, I just finally did. So it was something called The Mass Rider, which was based on Kamen Rider.
See, I wasn't wrong. It was, I just,
you never
I don't think
you
it,
were wrong.
No, I'm talking it out loud, but I don't remember. It was just called The Masked Rider.
Yeah, the American, it was because it was Saban. So they just changed the name.
How long did that last?
Very short. I don't think because this does not even sound familiar to me.
I just remember the crossover they did with Power Rangers.
Yeah, so they did that, and it looks like it was on air for about 1 year.
Ah, there you go.
Between 95 and 96.
Hey, there you go.
With 36 episodes, apparently.
Hey, they ran longer than the next
mutation. Oh, I remember this logo, yeah.
Let me see.
Real low quality.
Yeah.
Oh. Dear listener, if you haven't been looking it up for The Masked Rider, he looks like a blue bug with big red eyes and gold antennae and an outline. It is a very low res picture, but it makes a point.
Also, this show looks real 90s.
Yeah. Yes, oh, yeah. I love a good real 90s show. Oh, the nope, never mind.
I don't
face.
Know what's happening here. Anyway, continue.
I think it was just more focused on the fact of like, parents were upset that even though it was readily accessible at home on TV and probably in the cartoons that they were allowing their children to watch at the time, because it was catered towards children or based off of a children's show, I think that's where the uproar came from, which is still dumb in itself because let's be honest, most of the kids at the time, they were watching all the same stuff that parents were watching.
Yeah.
Like they were exposed to all that same stuff. This had more values to it and it had more of a storyline that focused on, like Amy mentioned, a sense of discipline and heart, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, which is something even like if you were looking at this, there was reasons for you to be like, I shouldn't be joining that sketchy gang or following everybody out to smoke cigarettes and gamble in a dark, you know, place. It looks cool, but it's not okay. Like you said, this was the one where every kids were watching with parents watch. There mm-hmm. wasn't really a firm delineation. You were, and this is no shade, you are proof of that, Eddie. Like
thanks.
You're like
my I try.
You're like I was watching things that my parents wanted to watch versus like I was.
Well, I had mentioned it on another show that I had done where ultimately children at the time in Latin households, their first babysitters were horror movies. So like families like would put a scary movie on and force the kids to sit in front of it to keep an eye on their kids because the kids were going to be focused on it. Like that's that's ultimately how most of those households went. So yeah.
I don't feel that this movie really should if somebody somewhere in the great whatevers was deciding that this movie, Spencer, this movie was the one that was turning all the children into to be violent. Grr. Like, what do I say? Like, I don't understand.
Yeah.
Well, you know, people, they're dumb and they like to complain about things.
It's true.
It's their own fault. Maybe they're not paying attention to what their kids are watching.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, you're letting TV raise children. Yeah. Wonder what happened to those kids.
They grew up to become us.
Yeah. So just,
I mean, we literally talk about like actual blocks of TV as we sat in front of the TV from like 3 to 4 or 3 to 5 p.m. Yeah. right after school.
If you were lucky.
I had a whole lineup ready to go from like 3 to 8. Like if I got the TV.
Yes.
And it's funny because I remember when I was younger, I would get so excited. Like if I got home at a certain time, I would catch the tail end. I don't know if you guys recall those like Jesus animated movies that came in a whole box set. there was always this infomercial. And mind you, it was when I was still out here. So don't give me that BS about, Texas thing.
I'm still going to think maybe what happened in Texas.
But it was like out here right before, if it was either Fox or one of the channels that had a cartoon lineup, right before it, they always played the same infomercial. And it was the infomercial of the Jesus animated
stories of Jesus.
Ultimately, but it was a more modern one. Like the voice sounds so familiar. If you guys heard it, you guys would be like, oh my God, I remember that, and totally get triggered.
As long as it's not the Charlton Heston one where he did
Charlton Heston?
Yes. I will never pronounce that gentleman's name correctly because, you know, Ten Commandments.
Are you trying to say Charleston Chew?
No. It could be a Charleston Chew.
And he never did an animated.
No, he was the voiceover for an infomercial for the stories of Jesus. There was
Are you
that.
Sure it wasn't there Wilford was, Brimley asking about diabetes?
No.
There I was remember
also,
that.
Yeah, I remember that one.
There was also one about an arc. I have VHSs somewhere that have really terrible, if we want to do that one day, really terrible Christian cartoon shows.
So,
but you
so,
watch that and then.
So either way, the kind of TV that was on during the time was always polarizing. But I want to jump into my last point about legacy of this movie. Yeah. One of the things about this movie is obviously we still are talking about it today. 35 years later.
Literally, we're here talking about it and you've made it to here.
And ultimately, like the franchise is what we celebrate. The movie is a part of that franchise, but the franchise itself is what we feel kind of carries that, you know, that glory of what the story holds on and continues. And all deriving from the incredible works of this particular movie, like plain and simple. You know, if it wasn't for this movie putting actual real, you know, characters in front of us to make it feel like these people are real, that these characters can be, you know, as real in life as we can dream it, you know, I think because of that, that kind of birthed the potential for everything else that came out after, including the next mutation, Spencer.
I don't know what you're talking about.
But my question to you guys is, like, why do you think this movie today still resonates with fans? Like, even though it's been 35 years and we're talking about the anniversary, it's still, even if you talk about the original trilogy of the Ninja Turtle movies, people usually gravitate to the first one being the best one. And even as we continue to talk about it later down the road, if we were to compare it to the other ones, like, people still put this one on a pedestal as being one of the best adaptations of their, you know, childhood fandom. Mm-hmm. And so my question to you guys is, why do you think it still resonates?
No, you were going. Yeah. Go.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, for the 80s, having the animated show really helped maintain that excitement for a live action film, which really did help of them as this turns and more people will remember fondly the second one. This one really did kickstart a generation of kids that were like, oh my gosh, they're actually real. Because there was also that delineation in the 90s where you're like, well, it's a cartoon, so it's not real. This didn't really happen. Like the implications of being able to see actual human size, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fighting crime would have more gravity than was to be expected. But also that was where we were still in the 90s, in the early 90s, dealing with kind of like superhero movies and how to create, take from page to screen in a believable way. And I think the reason that their legacy continues and it keeps moving forward is that this first live action film actually not only made it plausible, but believable. And that is in no small part to the amazing work of all of the actors and the Jim Henson Creature Shop and just the care and consideration for taking something and being like, listen, it's still a little dingy, it's still a little dirty, which was very akin to the early Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles comics, but it felt real, which is something that is very hard to kind of recapture.
What about you, Spence? He's like, ditto. There you go.
Yeah. Same. I think I agree with a lot of what Amy said. I also think like it's individual aspects of this movie, like the animatronics, like they look so good still. Mm-hmm. Like I'm still like, why can't we do things like this? Like, yeah, I'm sure it was a pain in the butt to make, but like it looks fantastic still. Mm-hmm. Even with me seeing people's faces poke out of their masks.
Eyeballs being thrown down throats.
Yeah. You know what? Sometimes if your movie's a little goofy looking, that's perfectly fine. Yeah. Like, there's a charm to that.
I mean, after 35 years, if somebody didn't find anything wrong with it, I would say, are we really looking that hard?
No.
I mean, so.
Just rose-colored glasses.
Exactly. Exactly.
Is it a perfect movie? No, but, like, it is a good one for, like, you know, getting you into the franchise and then kind of carrying on the momentum, especially with, like, the TV show going on. So I feel like a lot of, like, you know, people our age, you know, they're caught up in the hype of the time. And so, like, you come back to the movie and the movie's still pretty good. So I'm like, you know, just I feel like lots of little things add up to an experience that is worth returning to.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I agree. I think the resonation with this particular movie isn't so much in, like, how up to date or how relevant the story may be or whatnot, but it's the fact that it's a story that's been tried and true for many years. You know, the underdog, the unseen heroes and unsung heroes, the individuals who might be unique in the way they look or the way they sound or the way, you know, they may, you know, act upon, they are ultimately the ones who are deemed victorious after the tumultuous fight at the end of the movie. And I think that's the part that, like, I think people really do see as where they would derive hope from at the time, or they would derive, you know, their encouragement or their ability to see tomorrow in a brighter light. I think this particular movie is one of those instances where we do find ourselves in a way where, if it weren't for movies like this, we wouldn't believe in the magic of cinema as much as we do now. Like, yes, we have things like Jurassic Park and, you know, other movies like, you know, that apply practical effect work and things like that. But I think finding a way where we make a movie feel a lot more like something that is actually worthy of being seen as opposed to just another cartoon, I think makes us feel like we can achieve bigger and greater things, you know? And I think all in all, as we wrap up this conversation about the celebration of this movie, I think it's clear to all of us here and to you who are listening that this movie deserves its praise, not just for what it has in the film, but for what it continues to perpetuate and give us as fans of it the hope for a better future and the hope of, you know, greater stories to be told, not just in this franchise, but in many others. So, but that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Again, we're so glad you were able to celebrate with us this 35th anniversary. And yeah, this was great. Again, you can check out all of our great episodes over at our website at filmlosopherspodcast.com. There we got allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrills and chills, celebrations of films and actors galore. We got it, and you should check it out over at our website, filmlosopherspodcast.com. You can also check us out over at the socials at facebook.com/filmlosophers or at Twitter, Instagram, or Threads at filmlosophy101. Over on Instagram is where Amy posts all of her other content, as well as her Jane Unseen, which can be found...
Where?
Yeah.
The only place it's ever lived, which is at Jane Unseen.
It's at Jen Unseen now.
It's at Jane Unseen on Instagram and Instagram only. And if you're looking for new content, I swear it's not only in my head and in my heart, but it's in our episodes.
She's in charge of socials now, guys. So she's got all that stuff.
I got another job and another one, as DJ Khaled would say.
Yeah. So you can also check out our social content over at the Blue Sky page over at Filmlosophers, Filmlosophers. The socials. I forget what that link is. I gotta remember it. Either way, we're on Blue Sky. Look for us at the Film Philosophers. You can also check us
out. Podcast?
Yeah, it's probably. Who knows? check out all of our great stuff over at wherever podcasts are streaming as well, at iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, and Amazon Music. Tune in to your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at the Film Philosophers and give us a like or a subscribe. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
Yes, please.
And of course, if this is a movie that you are deemed celebrating as well during its 35th year anniversary, we'd love to hear your thoughts. What about this movie has moved you? What has kept you to be a fan after all this time? And, you know, we'd love to hear your thoughts in the comment section. So drop us a comment and we'd love to read it. So, but again, this wraps up another great episode with the Filmlosophers, and we hope to see you next week. So from all of us here, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Still intern managing intern Amy.
Class dismissed. No, it's ongoing. That's the word I think you're looking for.
Thank you. But meant same thing. It keeps but going. But meant
same thing.
But meant same thing.
Girl Jane talk good.
Yes.